Good evening. I'm going to talk about a number of people tonight. None of you specifically by name, however, so you can relax. Who was Adino the Ezra Esnite? Adino the Esnite.
One of the three mighty men.
One of what?
One of the three mighty men.
No, but it's in that area. No. Okay, we got the right idea. We're talking about what part of the Bible now? Old Testament, that's true. Yeah, that's good. That limits it down to 39 books, okay, right? Okay, that's good. All right, another one was a fellow by the name of Eleazar. By the way, Adino the Esnite was known because he slew 800 people at once, or in one event. Not maybe with the same blow, but, you know, in one period of time there in his life there, he slew 800 at once. Next one down the list in the scriptures was Eleazar. I don't remember his last name, but let's see. Oh, here we go. Eleazar, the son of Dodo the Ahohite. Anybody know what he did? No? Annette, what were you going to say? No? Oh, I thought you were going to add something there. Okay. Eleazar, this particular one, arose and smote the Philistines till his hand was weary and his hand clung to the sword until they had to pry it off the sword. Okay? I don't want in his battles. Okay? The Lord wrought a great victory, and the people returned after him only to spoil. And the next one down the line was Shema. Anybody know what list I'm reading off of?
He defended a field of lentils.
Yes, he defended a field. Would you fight off a group of soldiers for a field of lentils? I don't know whether the purpose was that there was lentils there or not, but it says here that the Philistines were gathered together in a troop, and there was a piece of ground full of lentils, and the people fled from the Philistines, but Shema stood in the midst of the ground and defended it, slew the Philistines, and wrought a very great victory. And the next one on the list was 3 of the 30. Somebody besides Tim. No offense, Tim, but anyone else besides Tim that knows of the 3 of the 30? And they're everybody saying to themselves, what 30? Okay, Sam. Got that one? He knows what chapter it's in anyway. Yeah, what's that? Right there. Pardon me? That's the list of David's mighty men. Right, that's good. Okay. Let's look at 2 Samuel 23. And the 3 of the 30 were the ones that snuck down into the Philistines' camp to get what?
Water.
A drink of water for David. Risked their lives to get a drink of water for their king. Now, we're just singing about the king in one of the hymns we just wrapped up with. And, we're also before that, we were singing Crown Him, right? But here, the three of the mighty men in 2 Samuel 23, in verse 13, three of the 30 chief went down and came to David in harvest time to the cave of Adullam. And the troop of the Philistines pitched in the valley of Rephaim. And David was then in an hold, and the garrison of the Philistines were then in Bethlehem. And David longed and said, oh, that one would give me a drink of the water of the well of Bethlehem, which is by the gate. I mean, he didn't just want water from the well of Bethlehem, but he even described where it was. Now, you ever think of a restaurant or some place that you really like to go, and when you tell somebody about the restaurant, you know, it's right over by such and such, you know, or you know, like down the bottom of the hill from Bob Palmer's, you know, there's a nice hot dog stand. And what's the name of that one? Pardon me?
George.
I should know that one. Herm's cousin is George. Not the same George, but George's restaurant down the bottom of the hill. And, you know, it's just a neat place. I go to Kurtz, you know. Maybe you have another place. Some people don't like to get water out of the tap. You know, they like to get that spring water or water out of one of these purifiers that you put in the refrigerator and keep it cold. You know, and David said, oh, I could get a drink of water from the fountain by the well by the gate of Bethlehem. Sometimes we can tell where stuff is from by its taste, can't we? You know, I didn't think about that until I was just reading that over a second time. You know, and there's different tastes. And when we were building a lodge down at camp just a few years ago, 56. Anyway, when we were building the lodge at camp, there's a creek. It's still there. There's a little creek between where the maintenance boys' maintenance well, what used to be the maintenance cabin before the front wall started to fall off, and the chapel. And that creek used to have, in the springtime when we were putting up the lodge and we were doing the electrical work on the lodge, you know, that spring to us was just the sweetest water. We used to take like 5 empty gallon jugs down to camp when we worked down there, and we'd fill them up with water before we came home from that spring, that creek, because it was so tasted so good. I've knelt down there and got a drink out of it the last couple of years, and I can't say it's the same. Maybe it's my taste buds. That could be, you know. But, you know, it's just sweetness. And we put milk cartons in the water up ahead, upstream for the morning, because it keeps the milk cold, because we didn't have any electricity, you know. But sometimes you can associate things by taste, you know, where it's from. The next one down the list here is Abishai. And that's, we know the story about the water, you know. David wouldn't even drink it. These guys risked their lives to get the water, and he wouldn't even drink it because he said in verse 17, "Far be it from me, Lord, that I should do this. Isn't this the blood of the men that went in jeopardy of their lives?" And then verse 18, Abishai, the brother of Joab, son of Zeruiah, was the chief among these three, and he lifted up his spear against 300 and slew them, and had the name among three. Was he not the most honorable of three? Therefore he was the captain, howbeit how he didn't attain under the first three. And Benaiah, the son of Jehoiada, the son of a valiant man of Kabzeel, who had done many acts, slew two lion-like men of Moab. He went down also and slew a lion in the midst of a pit in the time of snow, and an Egyptian, a goodly man, and the Egyptian had a spear in his hand. But he went down to him with a staff and plucked the spear out of his hand and slew him with his own spear. These things did Benaiah, the son of Jehoiada, and had the name among three mighty men. And then it talks about the 30. And I've got all those listed too, of David's guard. Now, we had Veterans Day this past week, and as I mentioned this morning, I had this material presented during the middle of the week here, but I'm getting ready for tonight. But as I watched this one program out of Ottawa, it had an hour-long program actually on D-Day, and how the Canadian forces, because it was a Canadian station, you know, but how the Canadian forces from Chris's native land went into France and just showed wave after wave of LSTs coming into France, and the first number of men that got there just got mowed down, you know, with machine guns. Then they got pinned down behind a wall, and there was only one opening in the wall, and this one guy decided to hit a pillbox with his flamethrower, and he ran, dodged the bullets, got up to the edge of the flames, got to the pillbox, stuck his flamethrower up in there and squirted it, and all that came out was liquid because he had been, when he got dumped off the LST, he went right underwater, and it just totally messed up the flamethrower. So these guys were still machine gunning. Another guy came up and tossed a grenade in there and took care of the pillbox. But these fellows were accounting time after time after time after time of valiant efforts by their fellow soldiers, many of whom were killed, left behind in the battle. And we have a record here in 2 Samuel of men whose fame was recorded in the scriptures. You know, we had an interesting discussion at the oversight meeting last Monday of accepting or not accepting fame from someone outside outside the believers, getting fame from the world and accepting recognition, I guess, is basically what it came down to. And I was already thinking about this topic here, and this passage came to me. We had someone spoke on Hebrews 11 not too long ago. I don't recall which of you it was, gentlemen, but someone spoke on Hebrews 11, and just as an aside, it's mentioned, this section is mentioned as an aside in that section. And as I thought about it over and over, and I read this passage, here the fame of these people. Now, this past week has been, for Friday, was a recognition of the fame of thousands, perhaps millions of American soldiers in the past number of wars who, well, not recognized necessarily by name, are recognized for their valor and for their faithfulness to their superiors and for what they've done, and many of them giving up their lives. Many of them living since then maimed or mentally affected because of what they had seen, you know, as some of our veterans here have spoken of frequently. as Ray used to speak of. And, you know, I didn't have to see these movies because I've been there and seen it all. You know? And these guys here, I can't imagine fighting 800 people, much less killing them. I wonder how many there were altogether, or 300 with this last Avishai. No hand grenades then. No weapons of mass destruction. You know, nowadays can take 10,000 lives just like that, you know, with the push of a button. And yet this was hand-to-hand combat, mortal combat. So as I was thinking of that, I thought also, let's turn over to Job chapter 29. Because Job 2 was known in his city where he lived. Job chapter 29 was interesting. I couldn't find this passage easily because I've lost my CD-ROM. I mentioned that to Tom the other night. Lost my CD-ROM online Bible. And so I skimmed through my headings of Job, and some men are just going through the different passages where Job speaks, whether he's debating with Elihu or Bildad or whoever the others are, or his wife. Why, the different, just skimming through the different sections, there's some really precious verses in each of those accounts where Job speaks. Good study in itself. But in Job chapter 29, it refers to, he mentions the following things. And Job was not a soldier. He was not a soldier. But he was known in his city. And in some of these cases, it almost sounds like he's bragging, but he's kind of stating the fact as well. And in chapter 29 and verse 7, well, in fact, if we go back to verse 4, as I was in the days of my youth when the secret of God was upon my tabernacle, when the Almighty was yet with me, when my children were about me. Boy, Job lost a lot, didn't he? You know, he lost material things. He lost his wealth. He lost his family. Lost great possessions. He lost his crop, his livestock. Lost everything except his boils and his wife and three friends. But he says, as I was, he's reflecting back on when the secret of God was upon my dwelling, when the Almighty was yet with me and my children were about me, when I washed my steps with butter, I don't know what that means unless he's putting oil on his feet, and the rock poured me out rivers of oil. When I went to the gate through the city, so he was one that went to the gate, says he prepared his seat in the street. He was one that they saw, and it says in verse 8, the young men saw me and hid themselves. You know, he had a presence in the city. A lot of times when we tried to mentor teachers, young teachers coming out of school, back a number of years ago, you mentored them that you had to have a presence. You know what that means if you've seen Uncle Dave start his family meetings. When Uncle Dave starts his family meetings, he stands there and looks at you, right? He presents a presence. And eventually the kids that are looking around, you know, or the kids that are talking, all of a sudden notice it's real quiet. And they're the only ones that are talking, you know? And they stop. You know, I do that when I teach sometimes, when I substitute, you know, at Frontier. I did that the other day, and it was interesting to see how long it takes kids now to stop talking. You know, it takes a longer and longer period. Of course, I'm not there all the time, but the kids that are on the ball, they sit there, and eventually they start nudging their friends next to them to shut up, you know, and stop talking, you know, because they're just standing out like a sore thumb, and now, Job had a presence, and it says, the young men saw me and hid themselves. The aged men arose and stood up. Well, Job was a man of character, and he even commanded, his presence commanded respect. And you young people, as our brother Don mentioned the other night, last Sunday, I think it was, as our brother Don mentioned, and challenge the young people too in terms of how are you presenting yourself? How are you acting? Are you acting like the other kids at school act? Same kind of speech, same kind of dress, same kind of priorities? You get caught in the crowd? It's not just young people that get caught in the crowd. You know, adults do too. Let's not kid ourselves. But I thought when Don presented that and challenged the young people with that, I thought that was a good challenge because we need to establish testimony at school and at home and with the kids when we play with the kids on the block as to not compromising the things of the scripture, and God spoke of Christ's example being lowly and loving, kind, and obedient. You know, that's a good role model, kids, young people. Christ presents a good role model for us to follow. Job presented a role model, and it says here the aged men arose and stood up. The princes refrained from talking. They covered their mouth because they were going to listen to what Job said. The nobles held their peace, and their tongue cleaved to the roof of their mouth. Verse 11, when the ear heard me, it blessed me. When the eye saw me, it gave witness to me. You know, he even in his appearance commanded respect. You know, Job must have commanded a tremendous attention when he spoke. If this is obviously valid, what he's saying here. Because I delivered the poor that cried. It wasn't just his presence, but it was because of what he did. He delivered the poor when they cried. He delivered the fatherless and him that had none to help him. The blessing of him that was ready to perish came upon me, and I caused the widow's heart to sing for joy. I put on righteousness. Boy, that's a good clothing, isn't it? Righteousness. Young people need to live a righteous life. Adults, too. We all do. I put on righteousness, and it clothed me. My judgment was as a robe and a diadem. I was eyes to the blind, and feet was I to the lame, a father to the poor. And the cause which I knew not, I searched out. Broke the jaws of the wicked and plucked the spoil out of his teeth. And we could go on. But now we're not talking about soldiers here, but we're talking about character. And the character of a soldier is one of commitment. The character of a leader, as Job was, and I realize he had a lot of wealth, and it was easy. You can always say, well, yeah, he was rich, so he could do all that stuff, you know, take care of the poor, take care of the blind, you know, and get him to some help, or at least have the time to care for the blind and for the lame. And you could say that, but God also has blessed each of us with things, too. And we can't just excuse our not doing things because we're not as wealthy as Job. Because, of course, Job was brought very low, right? And even Tom mentioned in terms of, I was thinking of that also as Tom spoke, and I listened to the tape this afternoon, of Tom's message where he talked about testing and tempting. You know, and Job certainly was tested. And with some of the arguments that his friends gave him and his wife gave him, he probably was pretty tempted to rebel there, you know. But Job was tested, and God let Satan test Job to the limit, and Job came through. In the end, God attacked Job and kind of put him down in his place there so his head didn't get too big in chapter 37, 38, 39, and we started seeing the splendor of God compared to the paltry person of man, you know. Those last several sections, chapters in the end of Job where it speaks of God and wisdom and the fact of God's power and his creation. Wow. Anything we can say about ourselves it pales by comparison, you know, compared to God and his the awesome power that he has and the wisdom and the power he's placed in creation. We also had to, also Tom challenged us in terms of getting to know people. The word was intimate that he alluded to and kind of went to towards the end of his message. And intimate in the sense of getting to know people, not just the hi, how are you, how's the weather type stuff. And so often it's superficial, it's so easy, isn't it? So easy. And yet it's the one-on-one conversations that really gets us to really know people, spending time with people. There's another group of soldiers, and we're a part of that army. You know, we're a part of the army of being soldiers for God. I had the kids sing "I'm a Christian Soldier" this morning in the song service. I had another one too, but we didn't have time. But that other group is caught in the book that we got from Carl last week, or we bought already from Ruth Steichler, in the Missionary Prayer Handbook. not just us as soldiers, but also the missionaries. And this is the it's called the International Day of Prayer. And many thousands of churches around the country today who are speaking on the International Day of Prayer and for the persecuted church. And I have just a short email here I'd like to just read from, I think it's persecution.com, which is a United States group, I think. There's Voice of the Martyrs, Wormbrand's group, but there's also this one here out of the United States, which is Persecution. International Day of Prayer for the Persecuted Church. More than 200 million men, women, and children in more than in 60 countries face discrimination, persecution, and even death for their Christian faith. Our brother Kurian, I wasn't here for that last PowerPoint presentation, but I understand Brother Kurian mentioned some of this as well last Saturday at the missionary conference. The verse here that's quoted is John 15:18. If the world hates you, you know that it's hated me before it hated you. If they persecuted me, they'll also persecute you. In recent decades, the church has grown so rapidly in the non-Western world that today more than 70% of the church now lives outside of the West. Many Christians are in nations with poor human rights, weak rules of law, and limited freedoms. Some 200 million Christians live under the dark shadow of persecution, daily risking and regularly suffering imprisonment, enslavement, violence, or death on account of their allegiance to Christ. A further 400 million Christians live with discrimination and non-trivial restrictions on religious liberty that create considerable hardships such as poverty and homelessness. Brother Andrew of Open Doors, that book's been around for about 30 years, Brother Andrew's sneaking Gospels and Bibles and stuff into Iron Curtain countries back when the Iron Curtain days were. I challenge the Christians of the world to pray for their persecuted brothers and sisters, to act on their behalf, and to live out the life of Christ in this needy world around us. Only then will we see the radical change and take place in the lives of people. Only then will we see the love of Christ replace the hatred of this world. The 2005 International Day of Prayer begins on today and ends on November 20th. While churches are encouraged to pray throughout the week, they're especially urged to take part in an act of advocacy through prayer on both Sundays. Prayer has always been the strongest weapon used by the followers of Christ in all situations. Remember that section in Acts where the apostles were praying and the whole building was shaken? The whole building was shaken. It says your prayer has always been the strongest weapon used by the followers of Christ in all situations. This year, Christians in over 100 countries will join in prayer to strengthen those who are persecuted for their faith and to comfort those who are overcoming the great losses wrought by the Southeast Asian tsunami, Hurricanes Katrina and Rita, and a 7.6 magnitude earthquake in South Asia. The goals of International Day of Prayer are threefold. One, to increase awareness of the persecuted church worldwide. Two, to lead in prayer on behalf of the persecuted church. And three, to promote ongoing and appropriate action on behalf of the persecuted church. We're afflicted in every way, 2 Corinthians 4:8-9, but not crushed. Perplexed, but not driven to despair. Persecuted, but not forsaken. Struck down, but not destroyed. Matthew 24, Christ speaking, then they shall deliver you to tribulation and will kill you, and you'll be hated by all nations on account of my name. Psalm 37:28, for the Lord loves justice. He will not forsake his saints. And then there's a passage in Matthew 5 in the Sermon on the Mount. Love your enemies. Pray for those who persecute you. Matthew 5:44. Pray for Christians in prison for their faith. And today, I guess as our brother Kurian mentioned, it's China, Laos, Somalia, Egypt. Even Egypt, the Coptic Christians are being persecuted. Afghanistan, certainly. Iran. China especially is starting to crack down on independent churches. And I remember when one of our brothers, I forget who it was, that came and it was Uncle Brother Dave had him come. Anyway, he had a videotape from China where it showed several Chinese believers. And it, sometimes it takes, I was telling the kids in the Sunday school class today, sometimes it takes 3 to 5 hours for 20 believers to gather in a local home church just to avoid being detected by the authorities. And a lot of times they are detected and they're arrested for a year or more. There's a number of pastors right now from the China that have been in jail over a year. You haven't heard anything from them, if they're still alive. Pray that the Lord, pray for Christians in prison for their faith, that their faith may be preserved, their spirits uplifted, their souls restored, their strength renewed, their wounds healed, their hope encouraged, their fear dissolved, and their witness blessed. Pray that the Lord would lead them into all truth and remind them of his word, that he walks with them and that they can never be separated from his love. Pray that they will endure. Pray for their physical protection and deliverance, that God would give them the right words and that they would fearlessly make Christ known, that they will see God's grace as sufficient and God's power perfected in their weakness, that they will rejoice in sharing the sufferings of Christ so they can rejoice even more when Christ is revealed. And then they leave a website for Open Doors Ministries and a couple of others. I was listening just briefly at breakfast this morning to David Kennedy, or D. James Kennedy, down in Pensacola. And he mentioned that Pastor Richard Wormbrand, back in the 60s, I think, was forced to stand something like 11 days. 11 days. I don't know how they did it, whether they put him in a narrow, confined thing or what. Been being tortured. Other guys have been tortured in many, many, many more other more painful ways. But just to think of yourself standing for an hour straight at attention. You know, when I was in ROTC, they told you to always break your knees a little bit so you don't pass out. You know, but it's incredible what some people have been, what some believers have done, have had to go through because of the name of Christ, and still going through as we sit here. And one of his closing comments was, someday, you know, up in heaven, we'll meet many of these millions of believers. And I wonder if they would ever ask us, while we were suffering, what were you doing? You know, that was a statement that he made, which is an easy closure statement to make. But to try to get us focused on the need to really pray for our brothers and sisters overseas, to really, if it's possible, to reach out to them, in whether it be Bibles, getting Bibles to their, or taking care of their families or what, but the need is there for real concern for our brothers and sisters, whether it be China or Africa or the way things are going in France and Europe and Britain right now. The Islamization of Europe is really picking up, and there's a lot coming into the United States as well. And if they go strictly to the Sharia laws, you know, it's not far down the road before many of these nations that our veterans fought to free, you know, Germany, France, Belgium, the Netherlands, Scandinavia, might fall to this new religion, or not new religion, but this new problem of Islamization, which is a very, we can still say it here in the United States, a very dangerous faith if it's led to its ultimate conclusions, which, as we're seeing over in many places of the world today, Jordan even now the latest. So I would challenge us this week, as we go from here into whatever directions we head, whether it's West Seneca or Orchard Park or Blaisdell here, or whatever other areas we go to. I don't think anybody else is from, from Boston. Okay, pardon me, I didn't mean to slate anybody in the front row here. As we leave this place, this is a week of where the whole church, millions of believers around the country are upholding these in faith. We shouldn't just do it for one week or one Sunday. But let's be more cognizant and more sensitive to the fact that we're in an awfully good country. These veterans that we celebrated Veterans Day for this week have fought for us to be in a very, very good country. It's a good place. Thousands of people come over to this country to live, to get a livelihood because of the freedom here. And we still have freedom of public assembly, freedom of faith, freedom of religion. So this week as we celebrate, as we remember this past week of all these veterans, living and dead, that have helped to secure our freedom, let's particularly this week uphold our brothers and sisters around the world in prayer for support, for strength, for some kind of fellowship in themselves with another believer, some kind of assurance perhaps that their wives and kids are being cared for. As this week passes, let's try to do that each day and uphold our persecuted brothers and sisters around the world, okay? Soldiers are not just soldiers that put on uniforms, but sometimes they're soldiers that are arrested falsely and beaten falsely for the name of the Lord Jesus Christ. Let's pray.